A Room with a View by E. M. Forster.
Recording by Margaret Mellish.
Part 1. Chapter 1. The Bertolini.
"The Signora had no business to do it," said Miss Bartlett. "No business at all. She promised us south rooms with a view close together, instead of which here are north rooms, looking into a courtyard, and a long way apart. Oh, Lucy!"
"And a cockney besides," said Lucy, who had been further saddened by the Signora's unexpected accent.
"It might be London."
She looked at the two rows of English people who were sitting at the table, at the row of white bottles of water and red bottles of wine that ran between the English people, at the portraits of the late Queen and the late Poet Laureate that hung behind the English people, heavily framed, at the notice of the English Church, Reverend Cuthbert Eager, M.A., Oxon, that was the only other decoration of the wall.
"Charlotte, don't you feel, too, that we might be in London? I can hardly believe that all kinds of other things are just outside. I suppose it is one's being so tired."
"This meat has surely been used for soup," said Miss Bartlett, laying down her fork.
"I want so to see the Arno. The rooms the Signora promised us in her letter would have overlooked the Arno. The Signora had no business to do it at all. Oh, it is a shame."
"Any nook does for me," Miss Bartlett continued. "But it does seem hard that you shouldn't have a view."
Lucy felt that she had been selfish.
"Charlotte, you mustn't spoil me. Of course you must look over the Arno, too. I meant that. The first vacant room in the front."
"You must have it," said Miss Bartlett,
part of whose travelling expenses were paid by Lucy's mother, a piece of generosity to which she made many a tactful allusion.
"No, no, you must have it."
"I insist on it. Your mother would never forgive me, Lucy."
"She would never forgive me."
The ladies' voices grew animated, and, if the sad truth be owned, a little peevish. They were tired, and under the guise of unselfishness, they wrangled. Some of their neighbors interchanged glances, and one of them, one of the ill-bred people whom one does meet abroad, leant forward over the table and actually intruded into their argument. He said,
"I have a view. I have a view."
Miss Bartlett was startled. Generally, at a pension, people looked them over for a day or two before speaking, and often did not find out that they would do till they had gone. She knew that the intruder was ill-bred even before she glanced at him. He was an old man, of heavy build, with a fair, shaven face and large eyes. There was something childish in those eyes, though it was not the childishness of senility. What exactly it was, Miss Bartlett did not stop to consider, for her glance passed on to his clothes. These did not attract her. He was probably trying to become acquainted with them before they got into the swim. So she assumed a dazed expression when he spoke to her, and then said,
"A view? Oh, a view! How delightful a view is!"
"This is my son," said the old man. "His name's George. He has a view, too."
"Ah,"
said Miss Bartlett, repressing Lucy, who was about to speak.
"What I mean," he continued, "is that you can have our rooms, and we'll have yours. We'll change."
The better class of tourist was shocked at this, and sympathized with the newcomers. Miss Bartlett, in reply, opened her mouth as little as possible and said,
"Thank you very much indeed. That is out of the question."
"Why?"
said the old man, with both fists on the table.
"Because it is quite out of the question, thank you."
"You see, we don't like to take," began Lucy. Her cousin again repressed her.
"But why?" he persisted. "Women like looking at a view. Men don't."
And he thumped with his fists like a naughty child, and turned to his son, saying,
"George, persuade them."
"It's so obvious they should have the rooms," said the son. "There's nothing else to say."
He didn't.